Fine. So we had seen this story of Rebbe and Yom Tov Amram, but I wanted to try to understand it a little bit more carefully now. Fine. So let us review this wonderful, wonderful story, which none of you found disturbing in the slightest. So the what happens in the story? Right? Go, Ezra, yeah.
There is a famine.
There is a famine. Good. That's always a good way to start a story about not feeding people. Good. Right, so Rebbe opens up the storehouses, and he says, anybody who's an expert, let's say, or at least knowledgeable of note in Tanakh, in Mishnah, in Gemara, Halacha, Agadah, whatever, any of those people can come. But Aval Ame Haaretz, Al Yikansu. Ame Haaretz, I want you out of here. Okay? Now, sometimes Am Haaretz merely means Russia in certain sugyot. Here it seems to mean not knowledgeable. Right? There are other sugyot where it doesn't seem to be that. Like in some very disturbing passages in Psachim, you think that this is hard to understand. Try those. Psachim Memtat has some of the, yeah. There it says that, you know, in Am Haaretz, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Am Haaretz mutar l'shochto afilu b'yom ha-kippurim shechaliyot b'shabbat. Right? Sorry, l'nochro. I'm sorry, I missaid it. Mutar l'nochro. It's mutar to stab in Am Haaretz even on Yom Kippur that falls on Shabbat. Amru lo talmidav, and his students said to him, Rebbe, emar l'shochto. Why would you just stab, say shech? Amr lahem zeh ta'un bracha v'zeh eino ta'un bracha. Because this one needs a bracha and this one does not. Am Haaretz mutar l'karo kidag. An Haaretz can be torn apart like a fish. Amr lazer umi gabo, from the back. Right? You know. So, like, the Rishonim say that Am Haaretz might be, it might refer to really Rishayim of the lowest level. But here, considering it's being contrasted with someone who's knowledgeable, it sounds like it's simply someone who is not at all knowledgeable in Torah. I don't know. And it's a bit of hyperbole, meaning the Gemara, it's a whole amud about how much Amei Haaretz and Talmid Chachamim don't get along.
Well, when the rabbi said that, of course not.
Well, of course not. But then Rikiva says, right? When I was still in Am Haaretz, Hayiti Omer, Havili Talmid Chacham, Anashchenu Kichamor. No, right. When I was in Am Haaretz, I would have said, bring me a Talmid Chacham, and I'd bite him like a donkey.
Oh,
so Amr Lo Talmidav, Rebbe, Emor, Amro Kikelev. Why would you bite him like a donkey? Bite him like a dog. Amr Lahem, Zeh Shofer Etzem, Zeh Ina Shofer Etzem. Because when a donkey bites, it breaks bones. And when a dog does, it doesn't break bones. Right? That's the position of the Am Haaretz towards Talmid Chachamim. So it's an amud about how there are these tensions between the Talmid Chachamim and the non-Talmid Chachamim. Yes. No, I mean, yeah. But there the Gemara seems, right, that we've shown him try to tone it down and say it's talking about a Russia. Here, the Gemara, by the fact that it contrasts it with someone who's a Baal Mishnah, Baal Halacha, Baal Gemara, whatever, sounds like we're talking about someone who's just not knowledgeable at all, right? What would you say someone in the middle? I don't know, right? Meaning, the interesting thing in the Gemara, it doesn't seem to be Talmud Chacham versus educated laity. That's not what it is either, right? Right? There is the two poles here. There's Talmud Chacham, and then there's someone who knows nothing, right? It's not totally clear what, if someone was mildly proficient, what would happen to them, right? That's not clear, but okay. So then you get the story that Yonatan ben Amram, his student, pushes in and he says, Rebbe, give me food. So he asked him, do you know Tanakh? No, I don't know Tanakh. Mishnah? No, I don't know that either. Gemara? No. So then why should I feed you? He says, because you would have mercy on animals too. right? All like all of you weird people who feed the cats because you have mercy on them, right? Okay. But then, right, so then what happens? After he gives him food, and then what happens? Rebbe says, Oy vey, I'm really sad. I gave food to Amaretz. It's a terrible, terrible thing. I really didn't want to give food to them. So Reb Shimon Barebi says, don't worry, you probably really gave it to a Talmud Chacham. Because, you know, you have a student, Yonatan Ben Amram, who he doesn't like benefiting from Talmud Torah. And therefore, he was probably just trying to get food, even though he deserved it, but he didn't want to get it because he was a Talmud Chacham. And it turns out that was the case. And then the Gemara says that, tells that wonderful story, that this is in line with Rebbe's theological position, which is all bad things in the world happen because of Amei Haaretz, because of the tax that was placed on the city, that the Talmid Chacham didn't pay, and as the Amei Haaretz refused to pay, they fled, and as that happened, the tax got placed on the people who were left until the last Amei Haaretz left, and the king just decided to forego the tax. So you see that all bad things happen because of Amei Haaretz. That is Rebbe's theological position. Okay, that was the Gemara. Now, what I want to focus on today is the very narrow question here, which is, what exactly is going on in this Gemara, right? Why should you not feed Amei Haaretz? What is going on? What? Yes, exactly. I knew Yonatan was going to say that. I was waiting for Yonatan to say it. Yes, it's like Plato. Oh, stupid people. Kill them out. Make sure they don't have children. Don't kill them. Make sure they disappear. And only the philosopher king knows where they've gone. Yes. What? There would be no taxes. There would be no need for taxes. Anyways, look, we were just quoting this Plato. That was not, you know, yeah, that is not my favorite chapter of the Republic, okay? That's clear. You know, Philosopher King, interesting. Allegory of the Cave, interesting. Most of the Republic, interesting. Infanticide, not so much, right? Not so much. And it's interesting, sure. Interesting. Yeah.
Could it be, say, like, the food was specific to the need or something for Talmudic Chacham, and therefore, it's not within its right to be about Talmudic Chacham? It's not like an ideological thing that you should be.
Okay, so Ezra says, well, maybe this was just donated for that reason. Now, it's not clear that that would be the case, because it sounds like Rebbe has some sort of control over this, but also, it turns out that he ends up giving the food to him, so... Okay, so Ezra wants to be Mechadesh that maybe what's going on here is it was donated specifically to Talmidei Chachamim. It was, you know, a kollel that paid its Talmidim with groceries. You laugh. I know there are, in fact, such kollels. That is a thing in Israel. Not in the Dati Lumi world so much, but there are such kollels that just pay with food. What? I don't know. I just know. I had a cousin in one of these kollels, right? That is an expectation in a lot of these. I'm just saying it happens, okay? I don't want to, you know. The kollels I've been did not do that. You know, been in did not do that. In fact, I was only in one kollel. I was in the kollel in Gush, and they did not do that. No, they paid me quite well. That was why I could sit and be in kollel. Yes. The Gush kollel gives apartments and pays. It's a good setup. It's a good setup. I would have stayed there for a long time if I hadn't been, you know, headhunted to be the Scondra's kollel in Toronto. And then I went there for 3 years, which was also great. I was paid, but I was like Scondra's kollel. So it's not really, I wasn't really a kollel guy. Whatever. My wife has spent more years in kollel than I have. Okay. In paid kollel. I've spent two. My wife has spent I guess, three? Yeah. Okay. Ezra is laughing at this. Yeah, I mean, look, I spent a lot of years in Beis Medrash in of varying sorts. Meaning, I was in Yeshiva for 2 years, then I was in YU for 5 years, and then I was back in Gush for 2 years, and then I was in Toronto for 3 years. If you're saying Beis Medrash, where I wasn't, I'm in YU, YU, that including my undergraduate and smicha time. So part of my smicha time, I was learning and getting a graduate degree, and I had a fellowship. But look, when I was an undergraduate at YU, I learned a minimum of 11 hours a day.
Minimum.
11 hours. Yes. Every day. Yes. I had a crazy, crazy chavrusa who towards the end of my Shana Bet, came over to me and said, Ziring, do you want to learn Night Seder with me next year? I said, sure, that'd be great. And he said, okay, but my policy on that. So after I agreed, he turned around and he said, okay, but my policy on Night Seder is we learn every day from 8 to 12, and if we miss any time during that week, we make it up before the end of the week. So, and I was like, you're absolutely out of your mind. I'm like, there's no way I can do that and be in YU and be getting a degree. And he's like, no, you can do it. I'm like, no, I think you're actually crazy. But I agreed to try, and that was my schedule for my time in YU. I would have a pre-Shacharis Chavrusa, then I would have morning Seder from 9 to 3, and then classes, and night Seder from 8 till 12. Yes, after 2. What? No, from 2 to 6. 7, depending, 6 or 7, depending on the semester. I did my work between 12 and 2. That was my work time. Or in the middle, or in the afternoon, like between classes. Yeah. It was great. Look, one of the reasons I ended up going to YU was that at some point my father said to me, he's like, look, if you go anywhere else and try to maintain your learning schedule and, like, commute to college or whatever, then the amount of sleep you'll get into a car accident. So you should just do it in YU, because then you don't have to commute, and then whatever, you know. Yeah, it was great. I loved it. I'm not saying you have to do this. I'm not scaring you away from YU. Most people do not have schedules this crazy, I promise you. What? Oh, yeah, no. No, look, when I was in Gush, I tried to get in about 17 hours a day, right? And when I was in YU, I tried to get about 11 hours, at least 11 hours a day, right? 11 plus classes. 11 hours of Seder and Chavrusas, and then classes, and then work. It was, in fact, crazy. It was crazy, but it was great. What? Correct. Then I took a break in the summer and would go to Sharon, Massachusetts, and learn in a summer kollel during the summer. Yes, correct. I don't know. That was great, too. It was great. It was a very idyllic time of my life. I enjoyed it a lot. It was okay, but in that time, no, it was fine. In my time in YU, I also, like, I got 2 majors, and I left with 2 majors, smicha and a master's. Like, I wasn't like, I, and I had two fellowships while I was there. You know, I got very good at time management in YU. Very, very good at time management. It just meant no sleep, time management. I very rarely went home for Shabbos. So this way, I, like, would work Friday and Motei Shabbos, and it was great. It was so much fun. You guys look at me like crazy. It was the most fun I've had ever. It was so much fun. It's totally unrelated to the thing, but it was so, so much fun. I loved it. It was so, so much fun.
How many degrees
are you? What? 5.
Do you have, like,
5 years undergraduate. Like, I was 5 years around YU between my undergraduate smicha and master's. because I did my last year of Wayus Michal back in Gush. Because I had finished all the Bechina before I left, so they let me do my last year of residence in Gush. My residency requirement. So I went back and I was in the Kollel. It was good. It was great. It was so much fun. I don't know. You guys look at me like it's crazy. It was so much fun. Look, listen. I knew I was going in, like, I knew I wanted to go into Chinuch, right? So, like, it was great. I wasn't like, you know.
Were you also married some of the time before?
Yeah, I slept, I didn't have quite the same Seder schedule when I was married. Yes. So, Ara and I were talking about it. We were, like, thinking about to, like, the first year we were married. Like, it was such a different life because I didn't do night Seder every night when I was married. I did night Seder 3 nights a week because the first year we were married, Ora was Shoelet Umeshiva at night Seder in the Stern Beit Midrash. So she would do night Seder at the Stern Beit Midrash and I would do it at YU. And then I had 1 night a week where I taught at Columbia at the Hillel, I think. I think by the time I was married, I was teaching Columbia. 2 years I taught at NYU once a week, and then 1 year I taught in Columbia at the Hillel, which was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. The year we were engaged, the year we were dating and engaged, Ora and I both taught at NYU. I taught on Monday nights, and I taught on Thursday nights. It was fun times. It was so much fun. It really was. It really was. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. This is like all in the recording, but whatever. I'm not going to try to figure out how to delete it. It's straight into the app. Whatever. If you guys need sleep, you should get it, okay? I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying, you know, I'm not saying it was a good thing. You know, I'm not saying it was a good thing. I just enjoyed it a lot. The crazy thing was that I don't do caffeine. Right? That was like the, you know. What? No, I'm not. All my chavrusas were like addicted beyond to coffee. No, thing. My night Seder chavrusa had a 2-liter bottle of Mountain Dew Code Red every night. That was how he made it through night Seder. And he's much more intense than I am. I'm just saying. I double majored. He triple majored and minored, right? Yeah, and then he got and then he did smicha and Kol Elyon. And got a PhD at Yale. Yeah. Fun times. All your fault, Shlomo. Anyways, yes, Ezra.
My dad also is super addicted to coffee. I think it's high source
was 2 cups
a day.
Yeah. My chavrus, well, another chavrus I had used to have like 14 cups a day. Yeah. 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 Well, look, it was great. Anyways, really not the point, but now we've reminisced about all the fun years in Yeshiva and YU. It really was a lot of fun. It was so much fun. What? Yeah, exactly. Let them eat nothing. Right? Good. Good. So now let's try to understand. Now that we've done that aside and we've all relaxed on it, now tell me. So tell me, what is going on in this Gemara? So I gave you four possibilities. So let's start with the... Okay, well, so let's try to figure out what's going on, right? I gave you at least four possibilities. Ezra has raised another one, but let's try to understand them. Okay, good. So, Rebbe doesn't want to give them food. So let's go through the possibilities. What does that mean, and how do you justify it? So, who wants to take up any of the positions that we saw? Yes, Ezra. Which position do you want to take up?
Any of them.
Which one? Take one up.
I like the Marsha.
You want to skip to the Marsha. Fine. No, that's fine. I said whichever one you want. So, fine. So let's take up the Marsha's analysis of this figure. So what does the Marsha say? Bio, who's the Marsha? He is. Thank you. I'm very happy you got it. Richard. On each daf he has Chidushei Halachot and Chidushei Agadot. Right, he has a commentary on the Halacha and a commentary on the Agadah. Right, so that's, if you look in the Marsha, the first part is Halachot, and then when it says Chet Aleph, that's Chidushei Agadot. It's Chidushim on the Agadah. Okay? So this comment is actually on the Chidushei Agadot, not the Halachot. So what does he say? Yes. Well, okay, well, first, what's his problem? Right, he starts off with a logical problem. And what is his logical problem? Why don't you have to feed Am Eretz? Yes, that is his problem. Now, he has a textual proof that not just a moral, he's not just morally upset that you would say you don't have to feed Am Eretz. He has a textual problem. What's his textual problem? That the Gemara in Gittin, the Samach Aleph, says, Mefarnesin Aniye Akum im Aniye Yisrael. That we even fund non-Jews. So we give tzedakah to non-Jews. So how could you say we don't give to Am Haaretz? We don't seem to have a Talmud Chacham requirement for tzedakah because we support everybody. Right? Right? That is textual question. Afsha filani goy mefarnes im imani Yisrael. So what does he say?
He says that when there is suffering going on in the world, you have to suffer alongside the other people who are suffering. And in the case of Pavlis Panin, if they're like smart and have self-control, so if you give them food, they'll eat enough to contain themselves, but not until they're satisfied.
It's more than that, right? What is he? Let's be very clear, very, very careful on what he says. Right? He says the problem here isn't that they don't know Torah. What's the problem? Meaning, it's more than enough self-control. It's that it was a time of batzoret. It was a time of a famine, and there is a way that you're supposed to act during a famine that makes you part of the community. And he thinks the Am Haaretz don't do that. Which is what? So he notes in the first paragraph of Tanit, it says, "Shigeis la'adam l'tza'er atzmo matzibur," that you have to what? Right? When the community is in pain, you have to feel their pain. And that includes limiting how much you eat. That includes not being engaged in sex, perhaps, unless you have to still fulfill your obligation of Puravu, Machloket Rishonim, how to understand that figure, but minimize physical pleasures, right, both appetitive and sexual. So he didn't give them food because he couldn't count on them to eat in the right way, right? To eat only enough to sustain them rather than to enjoy. So according to Marsha, the Marsha simply takes the seeming problem in the Gemara, which is, you know, we don't care to feed Am Haaretz, and says, what does he do with that thesis? Yeah, exactly. He throws it out. He says, that's not what's going on here at all, right? What's going on is that Rebbe felt that he only wanted to give food. Now, according to him, the standard is not Talmud Chacham. The standard is people that he would give food to who would eat it in accordance with the limitations of a Shnat Batzoret, of a year when everybody is suffering. The people who would do that, he fed. And the people he didn't, he wouldn't feed. And then what's Yonatan ben Amram's response? One second. According to the Marsha, what's Yonatan ben Amram's response? Correct. Exactly. He said, Noach didn't do that. Noach, the Chazal say, did not engage in sexual relations while he was on the Teva for the same reason, right? To minimize his enjoyment while the world was It would say suffering. Well, the world was dying, right? The world was eliminated. But the animals did not so limit themselves, nor did his son.
The raven and the
dog, right? And his son, Ham. And yet, he fed them. So he says, you see that you don't have to, right? You're allowed to have mercy, right? Even when people are not acting properly and not properly commiserating during a hard situation. That's the Marsha's read of this sugya. So the Marsha takes this and says it's nothing about Talmud Chacham, it's not about staka, it's not about anything. It's a question of whether you should be participating in people's misuse of the appetitive desire. Rebbe's position was you shouldn't, and Yonatan Amram was you're allowed to have mercy, don't be such a purist. Adam, please don't hurt yourself. What? Yeah, that's exactly it. Right? Is that the Marsha basically turns this into a Lifnei Iver thing and says, Rebbe felt that this was some sort of Lifnei Iver, that he would be participating in this, the Amei Haaretz, not feeling the pain of the community, because he'd be giving them food for them to indulge. And Yonatan Ben Amram said, look, that's not your responsibility. Right? You're allowed to give people food, have mercy on them. What they do with it, they do with it. Okay? Okay. I'll hold my questions before you go, Jonathan.
So, I like it. So, the idea is that you want everyone to be able to be for themselves during this time or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, by Noah, they're definitely part of the community that is the world. And because clearly, but no, now it is, but before that, they were clearly part of the world.
Yeah.
Right? By, I mean, this was their community, they just got killed. But you're right. Look, in general, defining community is very hard. Okay? I have devoted a lot of work in the last few years to defining community and how you define community in a globalized world. It's a very hard topic. I have written multiple articles about this. I've written how it manifests itself in terms of rabbinic authority, in terms of staka obligations, what? In terms of minhag. I haven't written as much about minhag. I've done a lot of research on minhag. I would want it to be my dissertation if I ever get a chance to do a doctorate, but I have not written that all up yet, but I've done a lot of work on this topic. It's hard. I admit, it's hard. Fine. Now it is. No, come on. Before that, they were part of the world.
Yeah, but that's not their model.
Yes, but that's not how things roll. You can't say, oh, please. That's back to Yaakov's moral problem, which is the rich people will say, aha, what do you mean? Our community never has famine, right? Self-defined as the people who don't need donations, right? That's not how things work, right? That's not how things work. What? Yeah, you can't just leave the community when it's convenient for you. It's the community you were part of. It's the whole world. Oh, come on. Oh, come on. Give me a break. Give me a break. Oh, come on. No. No. You should be mourning the death of all of humanity. Clearly, according to Chazal, yes, they should have felt that pain. You are so heartless. Oh, my God. Wow. Oh, the world should die around me. It's like, he's like, when you read the Midrash of, look, Avram was better than Noah because he cared about people around him. Even Stone, you're like, no, I totally identify with Noah. Let the world burn or drown, whatever, drown as it is. Come on. Mercy, man. A little, a shtickle. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Yes, you're still supposed to have mercy.
But even so, you're not part of that community.
It did, and now it's dead.
Yeah, it's no longer
dead. Oh, no, no, no. No, I'm not willing to accept that. Yes, Ezra.
So, if you are feeding...
Heartless, honestly.
If you're to feed it on the rock and the nominated assembly, what community is there left?
What do you mean?
Like, if you're meeting everyone, then usually everyone's suffering, then who do they have to be suffering
along with? Oh, so Shabbat Batzoret is usually more of a national thing. It's not just like in your city. It's like Batzoret, you know, it wasn't like shipping was an easy thing. It wasn't like, oh, there's a shortage in your city, but the city over has a deal, right? That's not how things worked. Okay. So the Marsha totally removed this from the question of support, Talmud Chacham Am Haaretz. He thinks it's more of a Lifnei Iver versus just having compassion. So, yeah. Do you find it compelling in the text?
I would see how...
Okay, so Ezra says, well, that's a little bit weird, meaning, is he really backing down? If it's like really a Lifnei Iver thing, so why is he backing down because of mercy? It's a little bit weird. Okay, maybe. So I let her know, right? Meaning, it's an interesting read of the Gemara, right? And in terms of all the moral problems that people normally have at this, so yeah, he just sort of walked away from them. Right? He says, it's about nothing like what you thought of. Right? That's basically his solution, yes. Sure, you could tweak this, right? You could take the Marsha's position and tweak it and say, well, if the standard really isn't Talmud Chacham, so maybe he's saying, look, there might be other people who maybe they're not wise, but they are pious or something, right? Sure, right? You could tweak this in different ways, right? Okay. The majority view, though, is that this Gemara really has something to do, right? Not about Lifnei Iver, it really is what it sounds like it is, which is about poor people versus poor Amei Haaretz versus poor Talmidei Chachamim, right? That's, which is what it sounds like. Yes. Okay, so here we have three positions, okay? We have the Ritva as quoted by the Beit Yosef, which may or may not be the same thing, and the Kovetz Shiurim, okay? So let's start with the Ritva. Remember the Ritva, what's his name? Where's he from? The Aleph is Alasvili, of Seville.
Zaragoza,
yes. But he's Yom Tov of Seville, right? Alasvili. So what does he write? Simply, there is not enough food. Okay? There is not enough food. So according to the Beis Yosef in this sugya, what are the conclusions that you derive from here? Do you have to support Am Haaretz?
Yep.
Yes. So in this, so the Beis Yosef says this is a very limited sugya. What is it? Yeah, that's all this is telling you, is that you have to support everyone, but coming to home get precedence, and there was a short, and there was a shortage. Very good. So that's the Beis Yosef claim. Now, look, before we show why the Beis Yosef is very problematic, and this is Nisag Lalach on Shulchan Aruch, this understanding, okay, is that no, of course you have to support Am Haaretz. The issue is simply that when there's a minimal amount of food and you have to choose, so we choose Talmidei Chachamim, that's how the Beis Yosef quotes the Ritva. The problem with that read of the sugya, as Yehonatan notes, now, morally, that has an appeal to it, right? Which is, you're not saying starve them, you're saying Talmidei Chachamim get precedence if you have no choice but to allocate, right? But to ration the resources. The problem with this is what Yonatan notes, which is, who writes that? What? So who challenges this, the Beis Yosef? Kovit Shirim. Who's the Kovit Shirim? Kovit Shirim is Rav Elchanan Wasserman. Exactly, sure. Rav Elchanan Wasserman. Who is Rav Elchanan Wasserman? When does he live? What century does he live? 20th. 19th into the 20th. So yes, 19th into 20th, but he dies when?
Holocaust,
very good. He dies in the Holocaust. His death is, there are a lot of mythical stories attached to his death. Saying the story around his death is that he continued learning while the Nazis were coming in and told everyone we're dying al kiddush Hashem and what? Yes, he was a Talmud of Chafetz Chaim and of Reb Chaim Brisker. Okay, his main sefer that people know is Kovit Shurim, which actually he didn't write. It's a collection of his shurim, right? I don't know if he wrote it or it's like written up from notes or something, right? It's very clear. Now, he taught basically high school level, right? Yeshiva Ketana level. Right? Those are the shurim. So they're pretty straightforward usually, right? They're pretty clear in terms of their analysis. He has other books as well, Kovetz Arot, which is his Perish on Yevamot, which is much more complex in terms of its writing. It's Chidush Agadot. Anyways, so Elchanan responds to Beis Yosef, and he says, wait a second. If this is about rationing, there are two textual problems to claiming that this is about rationing. One is that they clearly had enough food because he opens up the storehouses. So maybe you could solve that problem by saying, no, the point was he stopped trying to ration. He just opened it up, and it ran out. Right? There wasn't enough for everybody. He just stopped saving it for Talmidei Chachamim and said, first come, first serve. Right? So that would be a solution. Okay? Elchanan Wasserman has a more trenchant problem with this read, which is? Very good. Is that the Gemara, Rebbe's, right, according to the Marsha, maybe you could eke it out that all bad things happen because of Am Haaretz. But even according to the Marsha, that's a hard read. Right? But according to Beis Yosef, it's a really hard read, because Gemara says, why didn't Rebbe give them food? Because all bad things in the world happen because of Am Haaretz. That doesn't sound like a claim that supports, well, of course I'm going to give them food, I'm just not going to give them food if I have to prioritize.
I feel like you could say then that the reason, one of the reasons why you're prioritizing requirement of having a combination of funding is that we're not, it's because the suffering is caused by the animal eruption, so it's not there.
Correct. So what you would have to do to respond is to say, no. The point is, he's not saying that all bad things happen because I'm Maharaj and therefore we should starve them to death, right? What he's saying is that it's their fault, so I need to take care of the victims before the perpetrators, essentially, right? Quote-unquote perpetrators. Meaning, the Talmidei Chachamim are innocent victims here, right? The famine didn't happen because of them. It happened because of the Maharaj, right? That would be how you'd have to defend this. Is that quote of the Ritva, as found in the Beis Yosef and Shulchan Aruch, is that exactly what the Ritva himself says? What do you think? Is that right? Is that summary that the Beis Yosef has of the Ritva exactly the way the Ritva himself sounds? Right. So I think the Ritva is a little bit different. Right? How different, I'm not sure. Right, but I do think he's saying something different than that position attributed to him by the Beis Yosef. So if we look at the Ritva himself, what does he say? Amrin Adam, Kol Adam Shein Lo Bina Asur L'Rachem Alav Shenemar Kilo Am Binodhu Al Kain Lo Yerachamenu Osehu. Anyone who has no understanding, it is forbidden to have mercy on him because God doesn't have mercy on him. Ulefi Shaparonet Ba Lo Olam Bishvilam. And why? Because all terrible things in the world happen because of them. Umiru, kim sheyim savim, kamor acherim, afilu bir acherim, lo yamut bera'av. This sugya is about, let's leave the marsha for a second. Beis Yosef and the Kovet Shirim, right, both think that this sugya is fundamentally about staka, right? The marsha also thinks this sugya is about staka, and that's why he has a problem and ends up being mechadesh. It's not about staka at all, right? It's about letting people eat during a famine. Here's my problem with all of them, which I think the Ritva is getting at. Is this sugya about staka?
No.
No, what is the sugya about? What? I mean, what is the whole sugya about? Like, from the Mishnah, like, what are we doing here in the sugya? What? No, that's the sugya we just spent 4 days on. How did we get into that? Think back to the Mishnah. How did we get here? What? Very good. The whole sugya was never about the mitzvah of staka. What was the sugya about? Communal allocation of resources. Right? Think about what the Ritva said that's different from how the Beis Yosef presents him. What does the Beis Yosef say? Beis Yosef says, sounds like he's saying, that according to the Ritva, this is about precedence of the mitzvah of tzedakah. But that's not what the Ritva says. What does the Ritva say? If he's going to starve, then you have to give him food. Why? Because the mitzvah of tzedakah, mitzvah of achiyoto, to make sure he lives. But if he's not going to die, what does the Ritva say? What's going to happen to him? Oh, I think for the rebuttal, this is key. If it's a question not of whether he's going to die, because that's a question stucca, but a question of who do I need to support to enable them to stay in the city, then what's the answer? Talmud Chacham. Right? Meaning if the options are, I have limited resources, and if I feed first come, first serve, then the first, I have enough food for 100 people. There are 200 people in the city. So if I feed the first 100 people, the next 100 people will have to migrate to find food. Ah, very good. So I think that the Ritva's perish in the sugya is not, it's not about stucca. That's not his point. He makes it very clear. He says, if the guy is starving and it's a pure stucca mitzvah, of course you give him food. That's not what the sugya is talking about. This isn't even precedence. It may be true that you have precedence in stucca, says Amiricham over Ame Aretz. But I think the Ritva is the one person who looks at the sugya and says, whoa. This is, we're not talking about normal stucca here. We're talking about the allocation of communal resources. That's what the sugya has been talking about, by taxes, right, security. In that context, Rebbe comes and says, as the Ritva understands it, if I only have enough resources to keep 100 people in the city, and the other 100 are at least going to temporarily have to move to a place which has food, and now I'm trying to figure out, who should I support to not just feed them, but support to enable them to stay in the city? So then what does Rebbe say? You prioritize the Talmidei Chachamim. Now, one second. That claim, I think, if I'm reading the Ritva correctly, solves all of our problems. Not all of them. Solves a lot of our problems. It solves, first of all, the textual problem, which is, don't other sugyas say you should give stucca to everybody? And the Ritva's answer is very clearly, yes, that's not the issue here. Right? Okay. Before you jump on me, do you agree with me that if I'm reading the Ritva correctly, that it solves our textual problem? Right? Meaning, simply leave your old moral convictions out of it for a second. The fact that other sugyas say you give stucca, the Ritva acknowledges you give them stucca. Okay? Does it at least mitigate the moral problem?
Yeah.
It mitigates it, right? I mean, because it's saying, look, it's not that we don't support Am Haaretz. It's, here would be another version of that. Okay? Ah, so I think the difference between the Beis Yosef, right? Now, the Ritva, the Beis Yosef claims he's reading the Ritva. So I am totally fine with Ezra saying, Rabbi Zering, with all due respect, Rabbi Yosef Karo knew more Torah than you, and okay. So the Beis Yosef, as I understand it, is claiming that the issue here is precedence in the mitzvah of tzedakah. Right? That when I have limited resources, there's a bigger mitzvah of tzedakah to Talmidei Chachamim over Amei Aretz. Now that may be true, but I don't think that's what this sugya is about. I think this sugya is not about the mitzvah of tzedakah, it's about, because think about it. The Gemara invokes the story of Rebbe in the context of why do we exempt Talmidei Chachamim from security taxes? Meaning it's in the context of in what ways do we prioritize the either exemption from taxes or the allocation of communal resources to certain members of the community. And to be fair, we do this on Hayom, right? I don't just mean Talmidei Chachamim. So for example, if you've been following the news, every time they talk about a vaccine and they say, when is it going to be ready? What do they say? Not probably, but when they give it predictions, what are the predictions? They don't give a single prediction. What do they give? And for who is it going to be first? Very good, right? They say, it'll be ready for healthcare workers by X date, right? We predict. It'll be available maybe for high-risk people by this date, and it'll be available for the general public by 2075, right? Right? Whatever. But every community recognizes that even though obviously you want to give vaccines to everybody, but we give it to the healthcare workers first. Not because we think that intrinsically they're more valuable, but because society needs them to be safe more right now, right here, in this particular way. Right? Because they need to keep treating people, and that puts them at a higher risk for getting sick, and therefore we need to protect them. Right? That's the logic. That is an allocation of resources logic. Right? That's not really about Tzedakah. So again, the Beis Yosef may be right that there's a precedence in Tzedakah for Tamei Chama over ours. That is true. What? Well, the Beis Yosef is in Siman Reish Nun Bet, which is in Hilchot Tzedakah. So yes, right. Hilchot Tzedakah starts in Yerideah Siman Reish Mem Zayin. It does. I'm just telling you. It's Hilchot Kibbut Av Ve'Eim, Hilchot Kavod Harav, Hilchot Talmud Chacham, Hilchot Tzedakah. Reish Mem Zayin and on, right? So yes, the. Yeah, in Hilchot Shechinim. Now it happens to be, by the way, there are other sugyot that support the notion that Tzedakah, that Talmid Chacham have precedence over Amei Aretz and Tzedakah. There are other sugyot that say that explicitly, right? But I'm just not sure that that's what our sugya is talking about, right? And therefore, the harsh language in our sugya, right? And I think, by the way, this at least goes a decent way to mitigate the harsh language of our sugya. Because what's it saying? It's saying, look, the reason that Rebbe didn't want to give them the food is because, look, when I'm allocating the resources, the first people who get it are not the people who brought the problem upon us.
And also, if you're going to be getting rid of people, you're going to want to get rid of the people who bring the problem.
Correct! Right, honestly. Now, but I do want to make one point, and then I'll let Yonah don't attack me, okay? But here's something very powerful that comes out, if I'm right in how I read the Ritva, which is Yonatan ben Amram, is that even within that very, very limited read of the Sugya, Yonatan ben Amram comes to Rebbe and says, no, that's wrong. Right? Meaning, you have to remember that whatever we say for Rebbe, that's rejected for Yonatan ben Amram. Right? Which means that it's one of those things that the weaker the claim of Rebbe, the stronger Yonatan ben Amram's critique is. Meaning, if Rebbe is saying, don't, right, give tzedakah to Talmid Chacham over Am Haaretz, and then Yonatan ben Amram is saying, don't, have mercy on everybody. But if Rebbe is just saying, if I choose to allocate resources, I should give it to the people who don't bring problems, but solve them, the fact that Yonatan ben Amram responds and says, no, means that Yonatan ben Amram thinks that despite the fact that it might be the case that Amei Haaretz caused the problem, you still should have mercy. That's not your job. Right? That's not your job to do that calculus. So I want you to understand, right, that the weaker, so to speak, or the more limited Rebbe's claim is, the more surprising it is that Yonatan ben Amram says that's a bad argument. Okay? So that's why I think it's important, because even if Beis Yosef is also correct, right, I'm worried about two things in the sugya. One is the halacha that emerges from Rebbe's position, but the other is how far is Yonatan ben Amram going in arguing that you shouldn't discriminate that way, right? Yeah. Correct. And correct. And within this read, then you can go back to Yonatan's point, is that you don't have to claim that there was a scarcity, right? You can claim that, no, he was choosing not to allocate the resources to them because he didn't want this community to support them anymore. Right? And that would explain why at the end he can throw these storehouses open, because he can change his mind and say, look, if we have the resources, feed them and, you know, worry about what's going to happen in 6 months or something like that. Yeah. Correct, and it could be that he's correct, and it could be saying that you can't micromanage like that, right? You can't try to only, because at the end of the day, everyone contributes to society, even people you don't realize. Yeah, that could all be hidden in Yonatan ben Amram's read. Okay. Fine. Okay, I guess let's stop there. Now, what I gave you, okay, the next little piece of Gemara is in terms of defining how long you have to be in a city to be part of the city, which has some interesting nafkaminas from Mezuzah, but I think for now we'll skip it. Maybe we'll come back unless you guys really want to do it. Figuring out how long you have to live in a house. Yeah, before you have to put up the mezuzah, right? So there are related sugyos. There, and then after the two dots, the Gemara brings a few other taxes that Talmidei Chachamim were also pater from because of Rabbanan Lo Tzrichei Netiruta. The bottom of the page was the Ifra Hormuz Gemara on Pidyon Shvuyim that we did when we did the question of accepting tzedakah from non-Jews. And then the uniqueness of Pidyon Shvuyim, right? That basically brings you to the two dots on Ches Amud Beis. I'm happy to take up any of those sugyot, but if you want, the next sugya I think I wanted to take up is on Ches Amud Beis is the question of changing the resources, right? Which is, can the community take something that was donated to the community or whatever is part of the communal coffers and change where it goes to? That's a one day sugya from Machlokes. Ravenu Tam, fundamentally, Ravenu Tam Rimi Gash. What? Which one? We're talking about Tzedakah? Yes, correct. That's part of why I want to touch on it, is that one of the main figures that Tzedakah we already looked at in Erechin, about changing the menorah and the name being forgotten and things like that, right? That's one of the main figures that comes into conversation with our sugya. Right? Yes, which is part of why I want to do it. But I think it's going to further sharpen the point in terms of what are we really talking about. Yeah, in that sugya. It's in that sugya, yes. What? Yes, I know, but I'm just going to go a little bit, meaning I'm going to read through that. I want to focus on this machlokes first because for reasons you'll see, right? And then we can talk about the appointing over the community and and that's where you get the Rashan ben Eir, Lahasos Amiras, and you start getting the community making business standards among them, which is the beginning of the labor union guild discussions. All that's in that sugya. But those are the sugyas I think I want to take up here. You know, again, I think if you have the time, if you guys didn't do it today, right, most of you at least read through the Gemara, right? Okay, fine. So at least you've seen the Gemara, right? We can flesh out some of the points and come back to them, but that's the sugya I want to take up on Sunday, okay?